Okay, we're moving to agenda paper three. I told Kemi that calling this a sweep issue may be a little bit of an understatement. Kemi?
Yes, so agenda paper three. The interpretation committee received a request to clarify the accounting treatment for issues related to the remeasurement of the net defined benefit liability in the event of a plan amendment or curtailment. At its May meeting, the interpretation committee tentatively agreed to develop an amendment to require an entity to take account of the remeasurement of the net defined benefit liability at the event date when determining net interest for the post-event period, and use the updated assumptions for the calculation of current service cost and net interest for the post-event period. At its July meeting, the interpretation committee concluded that the proposed amendment to IS 19 meets the criteria for annual improvements. During the preparation of a proposal to amend IS 19, some of the interpretation committee members questioned whether an entity should remeasure the net defined benefit liability if a significant market fluctuation occurs. Some are concerned that when preparing annual financial statements, IS 19 neither requires nor permits to remeasure the net defined benefit liability if a significant market fluctuation occurs during the annual period. The staff noted that the interpretation committee did not discuss this point thoroughly. In this paper, we analyzed this issue as a sweep issue, and we noted that paragraph 59 of IS 19 requires an entity to remeasure the net defined benefit liability if there is a material change in circumstances, including changes in market prices and interest rates from the last valuation until the end of the period. We also noted that paragraph B9 of IS 34 is an example of a change in circumstances and not an additional requirement, and therefore does not conflict with IS 19 on this matter. We think that we should modify our proposal of amendment to clarify these observations. If the interpretation committee agrees, the staff will present a proposal to the ISB at a future meeting. For your information, we recently received an unsolicited comment letter from the Accounting Standards Committee of Germany. This letter provides its comment on the Interpretation Committee's conclusion in July meeting. Today, we would like to discuss this issue on significant market fluctuation only, and would not reopen our main issue because the Interpretation Committee has completed its main discussion in July. We would like to ask whether the Interpretation Committee agrees with the staff analysis and the recommendation.
Tony, as I recall, you were the main evangelist for this one. Did you have a reaction to the staff's approach?
I'm not sure people typically look at paragraph 59 as, in fact, I'm convinced they don't look at paragraph 59 as requiring remeasurement during a period. I think paragraph 59 simply says that if you've done an actuarial valuation at some stage in the past and you come to a reporting date, then you need to think about whether the assumptions ought to be revised. And if you only report once at the end of the year, then you need to think about whether you need to update your assumptions at the end of the period. Typical practice at interim reporting periods is to apply the same logic, but I've not seen anybody revise their measurement of service cost or finance cost at an interim period, even if they might true up the measurement of plan assets or maybe true up the discount rate. So I think this is reading an awful lot more into paragraph 59 than anybody ever has. And I think it's actually a substantive change. I must admit, my preference would be to amend B9 in IS 34 if we were going to do anything, because I think that reference in there is something to significant market fluctuations, is something that people find confusing. And it also potentially, I think the reference in B34 infringes the principle in IS 34 that the number of times you report during a year should not affect the profit for the period. And if you report at an interim date and you were to remeasure service cost and finance cost in accordance with this proposal, I think you'd end up with a different profit for the period.
Okay. Martin?
I pretty much agree with Tony. I mean, we have to consider whether we talk about internal or external factors. And what the standard is telling us is that we have a significant market fluctuation. Then we have to do adjustments. Significant market fluctuation would be change in interest rate or whatever. If I have a containment or so, I would agree to adjust my quantitative structure. But I would not agree to update all actuarial assumption, because I guess we would also lose comparability between other companies. I only would do so if I would say I have a material market fluctuation, but then all companies on the market had to do this adjustment. So therefore, I would use my same actuarial assumptions over the year and only adjust my quantitative structure with regard to service cost and so on. And I believe that would be even more comparable than if that company, who just has done a containment, should do a kind of restart or recalculating all actuarial assumptions. That's some theoretical and from a practical perspective, I believe that would be more appropriate.
Chaos?
I originally had a concern about the amendment, and now I have a significant concern for the proposal. Particularly, we should acknowledge the cost of these consequences, because I can understand the notion when significant market change happens. I think it's useful to reflect into the net liability and fit into the balance sheet. But looking at the proposed amendment, whenever we change the measurement, remeasurement, we have to reflect into the all the parameters or numbers to the following P&L, which means based on the same principle in IS 34, which is the same principle as in full-year financial statements, that means those changes need to reflect into the cost or accounting or separating the segmentation. That is, I think, that what this proposal says. But in reality, we wouldn't do that. We make a judgment for the materiality, but this standard amendment requires us to change that behavior, which is a significant impact. So I think I can understand the intention, but I prefer to see such kind of judgment or materiality is necessary and acknowledge that cost and benefit impact. Maybe not in the standard, but BC. So I think we should review the whole standard proposal and background BC, actually.
Okay. Mikkel, Andrew, Bruce, Reinhardt, and John.
Yes, I agree that I'm very concerned over the proposal. And probably you have mentioned most of the arguments there already, but I mean, we are doing the assumptions or calculate this year's service costs on the previous year's ending discount rate then, for instance. And if we have a change until the next year, and this will of course be in the OCI, the potential changes in discount rate. But if we do this proposal then and update during the quarters, then we will get that partly into the profit and loss instead. And that for sure will give different results depending on if you do this quarterly or half year or whatever. So that is one part, so to speak, that you will get different results. And it's I think the idea as such, having the prospective cost, so to speak, service cost on this discount rate, says that this is an estimation. And this, that the fluctuation of the discount rate, of course, as I say, is more variable, and then you get that into OCI that says that it's not really very detailed, so you should have a higher materiality there. Then, of course, we are updating, as you said here before, on a quarterly base now, the discount rate, because it's in the balance sheet has a material effect, for sure. But that would not be material in the income statement, because that would be spread out. First of all, it could be just a part of the year, and then it will be spread out over many years. So the materiality is very different then. And then coming to the cost side there, I mean, today we're doing some kind of simplified model where we try to calculate the impact of the discount rate, and that you can do on a group level, so to speak. But if you do this, we need to recalculate everything on all plans. And that, I think, is the difference if you talk about curtailment then, because then you just have one specific plan that you argue. But I also agree with that we are doing the curtailment on the volume or the number of employees, so speaking, not the full new assumptions calculation.
Andrew?
Yeah, I agree with others that paragraphs 58, 59 are in practice interpreted to address period end asset and liability management, not intra-period remeasurement if market fluctuation takes place for the purpose of rebasing the net interest calculation. So I think that would be to move in that direction would be a major change in practice, and to me would raise major concerns about cost and benefits, which does bring me back to B9 of IAS 34, which I just struggled to read as being consistent with the practical interpretation of IAS 19.
Bruce.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, my view on this was pretty much, it comes maybe a bit with what Tony was saying. That when I kind of took a look at this the first time, I remember paragraph 59 to me, I thought we were reading a lot into it. I think especially if you take out just the bit that we were talking about this and you read the entire paragraph, you know, it's starting off talking about, you know, doesn't encourage, doesn't apply. And I suddenly thought, you know, it looks like we've almost tucked away something quite material at the end of a paragraph that's saying that there's something that's being encouraged. And I guess that was my concern, that we're suddenly ending up with the major thing there. Secondly, when I took a look at what we were doing, I think like many others, when I spoke to people who are applying this is going to be a change in what they do. And I guess I'm not necessarily saying it's wrong to do the change. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not convinced it's a small issue. And I think if we are going to make that amendment, I think we're going to be pretty clear exactly what we're telling people to do, because I think this is going to result in people doing a lot more than they're doing now.
John?
I think we have to distinguish here between remeasurements caused by settlement or curtailments, which is where we started out with this issue, which was that if you had a settlement or curtailment, you were required to determine your settlement gain or loss, and that involved you remeasuring your DVL at that point, and therefore you were updating all of your assumptions. And the view was, well, it made sense to use those assumptions then post that. We seem to be now in a position of arguing whether significant market fluctuations is a remeasurement trigger or not. And I think IAS 39 would suggest that it's some form of remeasurement trigger. I think IAS 19 doesn't. It just tells you have to ensure that your year-end balance takes into account the market fluctuations in the period. That's what I think paragraph 59 says. It seems to me if we take significant market fluctuations off the table, we should still go back to trying to progress with the original proposal, which was that for where there is a remeasurement trigger, we should use the updated assumptions to measure your your pension costs from that point forward, because you have to do it to determine the gain or loss on settlement. And this issue of significant market fluctuation should be just taken off the table.
So, board member privilege.
When I read the paper, I wrote on the front of it, this is still an annual improvement, because it felt a bit more fundamental, and I think all the things you're saying would be consistent with that. It worries me a little bit if the staff think that something's sort of a sweep issue, which implies it's sort of like a tidy-up thing, which would suggest that our expectations of maybe how it was being read versus what's happening in practice is quite different. So my recommendation would be, Michael, that we flag that to the board. And we give feedback on this issue to the board so they're aware, because if their board's expectations are completely out of kilter with what's happening in the market, I think that's interesting information, maybe not for anything, you know, immediate, but for the bigger project that we're looking at on IAS 19 and pensions generally, in terms of what, you know, we'd like to see happen versus what's happening in practice. But I think the sort of cost aspect is an important one here for something that might be labelled annual improvement.
Of course, if we follow the view that I see developing and don't propose this and go back to just the event-driven, then we're not, we should still advise the board.
Absolutely, but I'd also flag this issue for them.
No, I mean, but if we decide not to take this issue, we should still advise the board, but tell them it's an issue for them to think about someday. But we're not dealing with it now, yeah, potentially.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Michael?
I just wanted to observe that a few of you had made specific point about referring to how paragraph 59 is read and applied in practice. And I just wondered whether there was any kind of distinction to be made there, or whether we need to be following up here in terms of sort of how it's read in practice versus how it should be read, or how it's written. And is there a difference, is there a disconnect between how it is written and how it is read and applied in practice? Now, maybe I've been over listening to some of the comments being made, but I just wanted to clarify that point.
Well, I think the comments being made, Michael, are that nobody reads it that way.
I agree.
John.
Just to respond to Michael's point, I mean, the way paragraph 59 is read is that if you do an actuarial valuation at a date that's not your year end, you have to consider market fluctuations and market movements between that and your year end. So it's almost like if I'm using information from an earlier point, I need to readjust that information or adjust that information for market movements. I don't think it's read as saying that that market fluctuations are a trigger for remeasurement during intra period, certainly not in my experience.
We are truly flogging this one.
I agree completely. I think that's what John described is the way that it should be read. So I don't think there's any inconsistency with what the standard says and what people do in practice.
Okay.
I think it's the way it should be read.
That was the concern I wanted to talk about.
Reinhardt has been hanging out in the corner there for quite a while.
Well, my comments are very similar to John's. I agree with the amendments as they relate to event-driven changes that we talked about. But when it comes to the significant market fluctuations, I agree entirely that paragraph 59, as we talked about, is really just updating the actuarial valuation. And I'm concerned that by making proposed amendments for significant market fluctuations, that's a significant change in practice. That's not what is done. I think it's inconsistent with the principles in IS 19, where IS 19 says the current service cost is based on the assumptions at the beginning of the year. I think IS 34 in the basis for conclusion says one of the principles is that the number of interim reporting periods should not change your determination of cost. And so I think I would not be supportive of those changes relative to significant market fluctuations unless, you know, the board decides that's important to do. But recognizing, from my perspective, that would be a significant cost for entities to incur.
All right, let's not flog this one to death. Laurence?
Yeah, I've been listening to everybody. I'm still trying to understand where we are going. I understand that at an interim period, if there has been significant market fluctuations, you adjust the DBO, the net DBO. for discount rate, for changes in fair values, and so on. So now, the practice would be not to adjust subsequent interest costs, subsequent service costs for those significant market fluctuations that are taken into account at an interim period. Okay. If we have a significant curtailment, paragraph 99 says you must remeasure using the current actuarial assumptions. And what we want to do is to reflect the fact that there has been a significant curtailment settlement for the determination of particularly service costs. Now, the question I have is, so if we are not adjusting after an interim period for significant market fluctuations, service costs and interest costs, if we have a significant curtailment and settlement, and we have been obliged by paragraph 99 to do the remeasurement using current actuarial assumptions, I'm confused about how we're going to measure subsequent interest costs and service costs. Are we going there to make a difference with what we would do for taking into account significant market fluctuations at an interim period, and so adjust service costs and interest costs, taking the current assumptions at the date of the remeasurement? I'm just a little bit confused how we make the two work. Sure. I understand where we want to go. I'm just confused how practically it works out.
Let me see if I can contribute. I'm not sure whether I'll help. My recollection is that this came to us in the context of event-driven situations, specifically curtailments. But also potentially other plan amendments. And the consensus of this committee was that the accounting that was prescribed for those events were, I think the word was daft. And that, yes, the standard prescribed something, but the result was, as I say, the term was daft. And so we resolved to deal with those event-driven situations at an interim period. Now, at that point, somebody, and I think it was Tony, but I won't blame it specifically on him, said, well, gosh, you could have a significant market fluctuation that was much more impactful, if that's a proper word, or much bigger in its potential adjustment, but you don't do anything. That, does that make any sense? And so that's what I think propelled Cami to try and find a way to say, well, yeah, if it's bigger than a bread box and might have a greater impact on overall pension cost, then shouldn't we also deal with it? The problem that confronts us is, there are several problems. One is, as I think Mikhail said, well, I might curtail one plan out of 50, but you're telling me that a significant change in the market means I have to adjust my accounting for all 50. That's a much bigger deal. I'm seeing Bonnie and potentially Martin shaking their heads, yes. So that is a significant cost consideration as well. I wonder if those who still have flashing lights, and I do have to go to the phone, my sense is that the sense of the committee is not to go reach beyond the event-driven situations. I didn't see anybody saying, yeah, let's do this. May I have a show of the hands at the table, and then I will go to the phones. Should we go back to our original scope and deal with event driven, those events being events initiated by the employer. Plan amendments, curtailments, and that. Show of hands.
And the settlement.
Okay, that's, I think, unanimous at the table. Fei Long?
If I understand correctly, no.
If you understand correctly, you would disagree? So you want to do major changes in market situations?
I do want to change because, I don't want to change about the market situation.
Okay, so you would agree with those at the table. Sandy?
I would agree with your summarization of it, but we're sort of also making the assumption that market fluctuations aren't events, right? And I mean, economically, are they really any different? I mean, I get that that's the choice that we've made to recognize curtailments and the like and not market fluctuations, but I think the spirit of Tony's remarks or his evangelism, as you would call it, were correct. Just that socially we come to believe that these aren't things we adjust, but economically they could have an impact. So
there's no question that economically they have an impact. The question is they're not under the initiated by the employer.
No, agreed.
Okay, I think that's the way we'll go. Because it's your last meeting, yeah.
Thank you. So I can tell my successor where we're going. There is a significant curtailment of one plan out of 50 in my company in May. I do the remeasurement using current discount rate, current fair value of plan assets, and so on, and do my calculation. Going forward, I have to determine service cost, interest cost. In determining service cost, I will use the reduced number of employees to determine service cost. For interest costs, assume that the discount rate had decreased significantly between 1st of January and May, the time of my curtailment. Going forward, what discount rate am I going to use to determine the interest costs on the remeasured DBO after the curtailment? Am I going to use the rate on 1st of January, or am I going to use the rates I used to calculate the remeasurement in May?
Okay, I hesitate. I'm not sure what the answer to your question is. Maybe there are others who are. But we did deal with this when we reached the conclusion to handle these. So does anybody want to jump in real quickly and volunteer the answer to Laurence's?
I can give my view, and my view is that it should be the new rate.
It should be? Yeah.
The new rate, the new discount rate at the remeasurement date. And I think that was the decision that we had made previously for event-driven items, that everything gets updated. And
Okay. No, I'm
okay. Fine. I don't see any disagreement with that.